Hi, and welcome to Guideposts. I'm your volunteer reader, Sandy Summers. Today, we will continue the February-March 2025 issue of Guideposts with articles like One Last Glimpse. Comfort from Beyond. Daddy was gone so suddenly, I didn't feel as if I had even said goodbye. One Last Glimpse by Carolyn Bryles, Leesburg, Virginia. You're sure? CJ asked. You can't come to the lake? Positive, I said. A gritty breeze brushed my face. The spring winds in Wichita always seemed to carry the topsoil of western Kansas along with them. Let's see, she pressed. Finals are over, so you can't be studying. You were doing your laundry 2 days ago when you couldn't go to the movies. CJ softened her voice. It wasn't your fault, you know. There was nothing you could have done. I avoided her eyes. Thanks for thinking of me, but I have other plans. There's room in my car if you change your mind, she called as I hurried away across the college parking lot. CJ was a good friend, but even she didn't understand. Winfield Lake was the last place I wanted to be. By mid-May, it was already too hot, too buggy, too crowded. I felt uncomfortable around people these days. Since Daddy died, conversation had become awkward. Friends wanted to console me, but they weren't sure what to say. They stumbled over words until finally silence saved us all. Besides, with everything that had happened, did I deserve to have a good time? Moving to Wichita had been a surprise. I was a junior in high school when I found out Daddy's job would take us from Claiborne, Texas to Wichita, Kansas. He would leave right away, and my mom, younger sister, and I would follow after the school year ended. That meant I'd spend my senior year in an unfamiliar place with unfamiliar faces. If there was going to be a change, why not make it at the beginning instead of an end? So I graduated early from high school with a plan to start college in Wichita. It wasn't easy. I had to add 2 correspondence classes to my course load mid-year. But somehow I pulled it off. Daddy had been so proud of me. Never doubted, he said with a wink. The only problem was that I'd be barely 17 when I started college. Too young for dorm life, my parents thought, so I lived at home and commuted to Wichita State. That was Mom's idea. Looking back, I could see that those living arrangements were a blessing. They had given me more time with Daddy, time that I hadn't known was running out. Quick with a joke, even quicker with an encouraging word, Daddy had been a presence. A guy who danced like Steve Martin and ad-libbed song lyrics. The man could work a room. His heart was as big as his personality, and he was often the anonymous donor when a friend had financial struggles. He hid his demons in that oversized persona, but they were always lurking. Alcohol and gambling tormented him. Those were secrets we didn't talk about. He was an engineer by trade, and that side of him needed predictability, structure, logic. The messiness of addiction undermined all of that, and when the contradiction was too much, he ended his own life. I didn't understand how God could have let it happen. We'd been a faithful family. We went to church, served devoutly, and believed wholeheartedly. Surely Daddy had called to him. Why hadn't God helped? I pulled out of the parking lot and headed home. I missed my father so much. Late nights at the kitchen table, sharing lyrics from Eric Clapton and Kenny Rogers, trips to Arby's for roast beef and cheddar, extra salt on the fries, Saturday golf tournaments on ABC, cheering on Jack Nicklaus. There was such an emptiness now. I noticed odd things before he died. He'd given me a treasured poem handwritten by his sister. He'd always pushed for me to be an engineer, to follow in his footsteps, but suddenly he blessed my aspirations of becoming a teacher. The man who is known for being loud would seek out my room for the quiet, often just lying on the bed while I studied, hands folded across his chest, eyes on the ceiling. Too late, I'd learned that these changes had been signs, things people did after they decided to end their lives. Why hadn't I put it together then? The light turned red at Harry and Rock Road, and I slowed to a stop. A car pulled up on my right, just like Daddy's had on the cold December night that he died. I inhaled deeply and tried to forget, but the image was clear. It was the last time I saw him. His palms resting on top of the steering wheel, he nodded his head to the rhythm of the radio, both of us waiting for green. I thought about giving a tap of the horn and wave, but I didn't. We had quarreled earlier that day, and I wasn't ready to make amends. The light turned, and I drove on. Why, God, I thought, why had I been so stubborn? My father could have had one last gesture of love for me, but instead I'd looked straight ahead. What I wouldn't give for another chance. It was a library book. We'd argued over a library book. I'd checked it out with his card, and it was overdue. He asked if I had lost it. I said it was somewhere in my room, that I would find it. He called it irresponsible. I called it absent-minded. I was defensive about disappointing him. My friend CJ was wrong. There was something I could have done. I could have reached out when I saw Daddy at the light that night. My own pride had stopped me. I pulled into the driveway and parked behind Daddy's car. We hadn't decided what to do with it yet. Keep it, sell it, or donate it. There were so many decisions to make after someone died. The funeral was just the beginning. With the spring semester over, there was no homework to distract me, and evenings were painfully long. I flipped aimlessly through the TV channels. Bedtime was a welcome relief. I lay down in my basement bedroom and closed my eyes. As my breathing slowed, I heard a knock at the front door. I went upstairs, opened the door, and gasped. It was Daddy. My heart leaped. My mind was calm but curious. I smiled and welcomed him in. His laugh was loud and strong. It felt so good to have him home. As Daddy and I walked through the kitchen, I felt the carpet's rough, short pile brush the bottoms of my bare feet. But when I looked down, I was wearing my house shoes. That was strange. The left one was long, buried somewhere in my closet. Stranger still, I could see the reflection of my feet in the baseboards, and in the reflection, my feet were bare. None of that mattered. I had my father back. At the kitchen table, I chattered away, catching him up on life since he'd been gone. The winter had been mercifully light on snow. I finished the spring semester strong. My sister's middle school was still in session, but they'd be out next Friday. Mom was working as a substitute teacher. The experience was surreal, yet I felt relieved and content. I glanced at the clock to catch the time and had to look again. The clock had no hands. Daddy's watch didn't have any either. "I need to go soon," he said. "Wait, how are you?" I blurted. The conversation had been about me. I needed to know about him. "I'm better," he said. "Daddy, I found the book," I said, "and I returned it." He laughed. "Never doubt it," he said. Then he reached for my hands and pulled me closer. "I need you to do one more thing for me." "Anything. Ask anything and I will do it," I said. He looked at me, his eyes steady and sincere. "I need you to live." He said goodbye at the door. This time I was determined to get it right. I hugged him tightly. He smelled just the way I remembered, barbasol shave cream and Brute aftershave. "I love you," I said. Daddy brushed back my bangs and kissed me on the forehead. "Love you too," he said, and then he was gone. I jerked awake. It seems as if no time had passed since I'd laid my head down, but morning had come. The sun streamed through the curtains. I rubbed the satin edging of my blanket between my fingers. Last night's dream seemed so real. I swung my legs to the floor. My house shoes were there by the bed, both of them side by side. As I slipped them on, I caught the faint scent of Barbasol and Brute. My pulse pounded in my temples, and I dashed upstairs to the kitchen. "Mom, did you hear anything last night?" I asked. She looked at me concerned. "Are you okay?" "Seriously, Mom," I said. "Did you hear anything last night?" "No, nothing. What's going on?" I rushed to the front door and flung it open. No one. I stood there straining my eyes for him, remembering. Taking it in, slowly the feelings of my dream began to come back and settle in. Peace, relief, contentment. The guilt and regret were gone. God had given me the second chance I longed for. One last glimpse of my father so he could ask me to do what he had not been able to. I glanced at the clock on the wall. The hands on the face were back. If I hurried, I could catch CJ and head out to the lake. I knew what time it was. It was time to live. For more on this story, see Family Room. A selection from Walking in Grace 2025. How countless are your works, Lord. In your wisdom, you have made all of them. Psalm 104, verse 24, CSB, by Aaron Janisco. The first droplets from the watering can had just splashed onto the leaves on my hot, thirsty flower box flowers when something leaped up and out. I stepped back, startled. At my feet was a big brown toad. Scooping it up, I carried it to my garden. "It'll be nicer for you here," I said, setting it in the shade. The very next afternoon, the toad was back. I hoped this time it would stay in the garden after earning a second trip. Instead, I found myself toe-to-toe with the toad again when it leaped out of the flower box for the third day in a row. What was going on? A piece of advice from a marriage counselor came to mind. "Has it ever occurred to you," he asked my husband and me, "that you might both be right about this?" It was wisdom I thought back on again and again. The complexity of God's creation often reminds me there are multiple valid ways of thinking about things in addition to just my own. I looked again at the flower box. It wasn't where I'd want to be, if I were a toad, but it wasn't my journey, was it? This time, when I scooped up the toad, I put it carefully back in the place it had chosen for itself. It and God knew the reason why, and that was enough. Thank you, God, for the complex beauty of your creation and for the reminder that we're all different creatures knit together by you with our own unique perspectives and paths set before us. Walking in Grace is our most popular devotional book. To order the 2025 edition, visit guideposts.org/WIG. Write to Guidepost, P.O. Box 5815, Harlan, Iowa, 51593-1315, or call 800-932-2145. It is available in a hardcover edition for $16.95 or in a softcover large print edition for $17.95 plus shipping and processing. Living longer, living better. I was a workaholic and everything else in my life took a back seat, even my faith. Then came Terry, by William Ramshaw, Spokane, Washington. I was always a problem solver, great with numbers, spreadsheet, business fixes, finding opportunities, driven, not the touchy-feely type. Most days I ate lunch at my desk. I worked 12-hour days, happily. I didn't see the problem. Turns out there was one thing I couldn't fix, me. One day an email caught my eye from a systems engineer named Terry. I'd emailed him asking him about the status of a software build. It wasn't his answer that got my attention. Instead, it was a symbol that was part of his signature, a fish, the sign some Christians use to advertise their faith. I'd seen it on the back of cars, but in a work email? I went to church pretty regularly, but I didn't advertise it. I was puzzled that someone could be so open. I don't know why, but I decided I had to meet him. Stopping by his cubicle later, I said, "Hi, I'm Bill, Director of Software Support. I saw your email just now, and I thought I'd introduce myself." "Good to meet you," Terry said. "Hope I got you what you needed." He had the engineer vibe to me, measured, thoughtful, quiet, not type A like me, more laid back. "I saw the fish on your email," I said, trying to think of something more to say. "You want to go grab lunch sometime?" "Sure," Terry said. "I'd like that." We met in the company cafeteria a couple weeks later. We worked for a software company that had once been one of the larger employers in Spokane, but it had been shedding employees for years. Terry had been there longer than the two years I had, but it was still a big enough company that our paths might never have crossed if not for the fish at the end of his email. "You golf?" Terry said as we settled in with our food. "No, I never have," I said. "I'm all about work." Terry nodded. "Well, that's kind of how I am with golf," he said. "As long as you love what you're doing, I guess. Between golf and going out with my wife and my friends, church and volunteering, I don't have much downtime either." An hour flew by. Terry told me about attending the Masters Golf Tournament in Augusta, Georgia. I told him about meeting my wife at a church youth skate night, about the 16 years I had served as an officer in the U.S. Navy. He seemed completely different from me, and yet I'd never met anyone so easy to talk to. He told me about how much his church meant to him, how he felt God at work in his life every day. I'd never felt comfortable talking about any of that, but Terry made it feel completely natural. "We should do this again," I heard myself say. "How about next week?" And so our weekly lunches began. No agenda, just chatting. Male bonding, I guess. The company continued to struggle, and that challenge weighed on me. I moved into a position with even greater responsibility, managing the delivery of bigger software development projects, working all day and late into the night, wanting to make something happen. But Terry and I almost never talked about work. The conversation seemed to go elsewhere naturally. Terry's golf game, a restaurant my wife and I had checked out after I'd spent another Saturday at the office. On the side, I taught a project management class at a local university, and I mentioned my challenges with teaching, just chit-chat, and yet I found myself valuing Terry's company and sharing my fears. I'm dreading the next round of layoffs, I told him at one lunch. What if my number comes up? I've got two daughters in college. Trust God, Terry said. He'll provide. I'd heard plenty of people say this, of course, but with Terry it didn't sound like a religious platitude. You have to let go of the idea that you're in control, he added with a smile. Yeah, but, I protested, I was a project manager after all. No buts, Terry said. He reached across the table and tapped my hand. Then he bowed his head and prayed for me. Aloud. He prayed aloud before at our lunches, and it always freaked me out a little. This time, I felt his deep and abiding concern, as if I were meant to hear his prayer. Still, I wasn't Terry. I couldn't just hope things would be okay. A few months later, I left the company. I ended up working for three different outfits over 3 years. Weekly lunches with Terry fell off to coffee once a month. I missed his company, the constancy of his faith. Are you happy? Terry asked me one time. I'm okay, I said. I just wish I could get into something more demanding, something more all-consuming. Terry finished my thought with a shake of his head. Remember, Bill, life is about people, not projects. At last, I got hired as a project manager for a utility company. I found myself working 60 to 70 hours a week. I loved it. It was like a drug. I couldn't get enough. Still, I faithfully met Terry for coffee once a month. I wasn't entirely sure why. He and I seemed to live in completely different worlds, with different focuses, different priorities. I couldn't see what Terry saw in me, but after an hour together, my world felt lighter, brighter. I entertained the idea that it wasn't a coincidence that our paths had crossed. Thought for what reason, I had no clue. One Saturday, hard at work at my desk, I felt off, just dragging. There was a dull but definite pain in my gut. The pain persisted, and I finally went to the doctor. He ran what he called some routine tests. A week later, I was back at the doctor's office in severe, debilitating pain. A CT scan revealed a blocked bile duct. The emergency surgery that followed revealed something far, far worse, pancreatic cancer. It was a virtual death sentence. I was devastated. How could it all just be over like that? What about my wife, my girls? I was referred to a renowned cancer surgeon who was an expert in a radical surgery known as the Whipple procedure, which removes the head of the pancreas, part of the small intestine, the gallbladder, and the bile. Everything is going to be okay, the surgeon told me, but when you wake up, you'll feel as if you've been hit by a truck. He wasn't kidding. For weeks after the procedure, I felt as if I'd been gutted like a fish. I went through months of radiation and chemo, suffered complication after complication, sick, exhausted, leading a torturous existence with my wife and my girls at my side. Too weak to see Terry, I could only read his text that he was praying for me. I was too weak to work, something that would have been inconceivable to me a year or so earlier. Slowly, miraculously, I recovered enough to meet Terry again for our monthly lunch. My strength returned. A former client called saying they had lost their lead project manager. I jumped at the chance, but lasted only a week. Even though my cancer was at bay, I wasn't physically able to work from sunup to sundown anymore. At our next lunch, I told Terry how angry I was at God. Why did he heal me if I can't get back to what I loved? I demanded. Terry looked at me questioningly, then asked, That's a good question, Bill. What do you truly love? I opened my mouth, but no words came. Suddenly, that fish symbol at the bottom of Terry's email flashed in my mind's eye. It wasn't an advertisement. It was a declaration. Did I love God the way Terry did? Did I love the gifts that God had given me, my family, my health, my friendship with Terry? None of it seemed random, not meeting my wife at church skate night, certainly not meeting Terry. Something he said came back to me. Life is about people, not projects. How had it taken me so long to understand that? Let's pray, Terry said, about what life has in store next for you. And we did, aloud. A short time later, I got a message through LinkedIn from Gonzaga University. We have an opening to teach our operations management class, the message read. Could you step in and teach? Terry really did have an in with God, I thought. Yes, I wrote back. When can I start? I texted Terry the news. That's wonderful, he answered. But at our next lunch, I confessed my fears. I'm a numbers guy, I said. Teaching has always been hard for me. I'm not sure this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I question God all the time, Terry said. I think all of us do. But you're there for a reason. Sometimes the most important thing is just to show up. I thought back to one of our first lunches together and Terry's admonition to let go, to recognize that for all my problem-solving skills, I wasn't the one in control. Trusting God was about showing up, the way Terry had shown up for me, like so many of the overlooked gifts that God had given me. Shall we pray? Terry asked. And we did, aloud. It didn't freak me out one bit. For more on this story, see Family Room. I'm Sandy Summers, and you're listening to Guideposts on Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour reading and information service for people who can't read print due to a disability. If you missed any part of this program, you can access it anytime on demand at www.sunsounds.org. In addition to the bi-monthly Guideposts magazine, each week we may be reading some of Guideposts' other daily devotions or inspiring stories from Guideposts online. Generation to generation. On Sundays when my great-grandmother could no longer make it to church, she cranked up Tennessee Ernie Ford's all-time greatest hymns, and it wasn't because she was hard of hearing. High Fidelity by Jenny Ivy, Cokeville, Tennessee. I rifled through the beat-up cardboard box filled with music CDs, looking for something to play on an upcoming car trip. At the bottom, beneath the classic country and classic rock, I found an album I hadn't come across in years. Tennessee Ernie Ford's All-Time Greatest Hymns. My mind harkened back more than a half century to a cozy suburban house in Augusta, Georgia, where I'd grown up. My family shared our home with my maternal great-grandmother, Jenny Matthews, my namesake. Grandma was well into her 80s when she came to live with us. I was 9. Though she considered herself spry, in truth, it was often hard for her to get around. Her feet were so arthritic, it was sometimes difficult for her even to stand. That didn't matter to either of us because there were plenty of fun things we could do sitting down. I read to her and she read to me. We played Yahtzee, we played Scrabble, we played cards. We grew a big, messy flower bed. I planted and weeded and watered while Grandma supervised from a lawn chair. So we had a beautiful bouquets for the dining table. We watched baseball on the tiny black and white portable TV in her room, which inspired my lifelong love of the game. We ate lunch together whenever I wasn't in school, a bologna and cheese sandwich for me, and day-old cornbread crumbled into a glass of cold buttermilk for her. But my favorite thing to do with Grandma was something we called church at home. Most Sunday mornings, Grandma shook her head when my parents asked if she wanted to accompany us to the little Methodist church in our neighborhood. I'm too slow and creaky, she said. Y'all go on without me. I'll just have church at home. One Sunday morning, I woke up feeling sick. Maybe we should stay home with you should stay home with Grandma, my mother said. So I did. Grandma and I lingered at the breakfast table after everyone else had left. She was daintily sipping the coffee she'd poured into her saucer to cool. Tell me about the Sunday school class you're missing today, she said. I told her I had lots of friends and that my teacher was nice. We're learning about John Wesley. Grandma reached across the table to squeeze my hand. How about you clear the dishes while I get dressed? I'll meet you in the living room in 10 minutes. Sunshine streamed through the windows as Grandma settled into her rocking chair. I plopped down on the couch. She held a writing tablet and a fountain pen in her lap. First, she said, we'll make a list of our worries. I mentioned a long division test coming up and my friend Allison's dog who had an infected leg. Grandma listed a thunderstorm predicted for later that day and her grandson who'd just been drafted into the army. We bowed our heads. Ease our worries, Lord, Grandma prayed. Then we listed our joys. I'd been invited to a skating party that week and had learned to play a new chord on my guitar. Grandma was glad the New York Yankees had won 3 games in a row, and she'd received a letter from her baby sister who lived 300 miles away. Again, we bowed our heads. Thank you for our many blessings, Lord, Grandma prayed. We said the Lord's Prayer in unison. Then it was time for Bible reading. Old Testament or new, Grandma asked me. Old, I said. Pharaoh's daughter finds baby Moses in the bulrushes. It was one of my favorite stories, and Grandma knew it. She opened her worn King James Bible. Now, if I can just remember where to find baby Moses. I couldn't help but giggle. Exodus, Grandma, chapter 2. She turned to it and handed me the Bible so I could read the first 10 verses aloud. Now it was Grandma's turn to pick something. I knew she read a New Testament chapter every day. She chose the last part of Matthew 25, in which Jesus talks about feeding the hungry and visiting those who are sick and in prison. Grandma motioned for me to come closer so we could read aloud together. Once the praying and Bible reading were over, the singing began. The record Grandma chose for us was Tennessee Ernie Ford's all-time greatest hymns. I put it on the turntable of the hi-fi stereo that took up one whole wall of our living room and cranked up the volume. Ernie Ford sang The Old Rugged Cross and Bringing in the Sheaves and What a Friend We Have in Jesus and lots of others with me and Grandma singing along. Then church at home was over and my parents and my younger brother Rusty burst through the front door laughing and talking and ready for lunch. There were many more Sundays after that that I would stay home from church, not because I was sick, but just so I could worship with Grandma. My great-grandmother Jenny had been gone from this earth for decades now, but she's never far from me, especially on Sunday mornings when I can't attend church in person. On those mornings, I pray about my worries and thank God for my joys. I read from Grandma's old Bible, one story from the Old Testament and one from the New Testament. And then comes the best part. I play Tennessee Ernie Ford CD I unearthed, which I'd brought to replace Grandma's beloved record. And Grandma still holds my hand and rocks and sings those dear old hymns along with me. For more on this story, see Family Room. That's all the time we have today for Guideposts. Thank you for listening. My name is Sandy Summers. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.